Derek Broz is one of the exceptional. Journalist, filmmaker, activist, he is here today to share his thoughts about this pandemic, which has dominated our attention and in many cases our lives over the past year. And it is my strongest hope that this event will not just terminate tonight, that we will take the information that we have learned here tonight and we will continue on this dialogue. So if we have, si alguien aquí solamente hablan español, por favor, va a este rincón y Miriam va a traducir esta charla para ti. Okay? So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Derek Broz.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, let's give a round of applause for Janet, please. She helped us find the venue and get this together. So, again, if anybody needs Spanish translation, because I apologize, my Spanish is not strong enough yet where I feel confident to share what I need to share tonight. My partner, Miriam, if anybody wants to come sit near her, she can do Spanish translation while we're speaking. So please feel free to take us up on that offer if you need any. And I appreciate you welcoming me to the community. I actually have some notes tonight. I don't usually take notes, but I feel like there's a lot of important things to share, so I'm going to have these notes with me. Again, I want to thank Janet. I want to thank Nathan, Margot, and Peter for welcoming me here to San Cristobal and helping put this together. Before we start, I'm going to do things a little bit backwards tonight. I'm going to tell you about myself in a little while. First, I'd like to breathe with you guys. Can we just take a deep breath? Let's do another one. I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you a story about loss, struggle, triumph. I want to tell you a story about colonization, of 500 years of loss, struggle, triumph, and 500 years of each of our ancestors likely fighting each other, loving each other, hating each other in various ways, various times, various places. We're talking about colonization of the mind, colonization of the body, colonization of the food supply. And I don't have to, I think, get it too deep into the details about what I'm speaking about, what's happened not only in the country that we are in now, in North America and in Australia and across Europe and other places. We're all familiar with the story, I believe. And this story of colonization and of loss and struggle and triumph, it also is followed by periods of growth, excitement, development, hope for the future for some people. And, you know, our indigenous traditions teach us about the seven generations, about preparing for, thinking about the actions that we take today and how they're going to affect those who are coming into the future. Your children, your grandchildren, and so on. The seven generations and beyond, the people that we will never meet. The people whose lives right now are being shaped by the actions we choose to take or not take. And the children of the colonized, what that began 500 years ago and maybe even before in some parts of the world, the children of that time, the seven generations from that time, are us. Our ancestors were fighting against this colonizing force, this predator energy, what I call the predator class, fighting against that and trying to preserve what they could of the traditions, that these beautiful traditions, that some of which are really obvious and upfront here in San Cristobal. And and we are the seven generations. We are the result of what has happened in the past. And just like that, this generation, our story for many of us, is one of being born disconnected from those traditions, being disconnected from where we come from, being disconnected from our ancestors. Because, you know, there's a lot of division out in the world today that wants us to divide and separate and feel like we don't get along. But the reality is that we are all indigenous. And I want everybody of every race and color and language in here to hear that. Because, for one, I pay homage and tribute to the Zapatistas and to the indigenous people around here who are fighting to preserve their ways, and understanding that, you know, there's a balance in that. There's a lot of people in this story who they either want to consider us savages or they want to consider us this noble myth, and they think that, you know, every time an indigenous person walks out their front door, a bald eagle flies over and, you know, there's a flute playing in the background or something like this. But reality is we're all humans, and you know, we're all trying to connect to that. So wherever you come from, wherever you trace your ancestors back to, whether it's this land or north of the Rio Grande or on the other side of the ocean, you have roots. But our story, as I said, is one of being disconnected, because it was the indigenous folks of Europe that were colonized before that colonizing force started to spread out around the world. They've lost their ways even further than the last 500 years that us natives of North and South America have been fighting for it. So that's important to remember, that we are all indigenous, and in many ways we have all become disconnected from our roots, and I think that's what brings us to places like this and looking for answers. But the story continues, right? We're still writing our story. And there was a boy that was part of this story, a young boy, born apart from his people, his traditions, his ancestors, his customs, his language. And this boy was raised in a world with no connection to the past. And this boy and this girl are all around us, and sometimes they are us, and it is our story. Raised without any connection to the past, seeking love and connection, finding it in lust, drugs, distractions, whatever you name it, just anything to self-medicate, to deal with this disconnection from this colonization that has plagued so many of us around the world. And in this pursuit of healing and self-medication, this young one was put in the so-called justice system, was placed behind bars and told, deal with it. Figure out why you're this way. Figure out why you're using drugs and alcohol to self-medicate. And the young one was lost and hurt and angry, part of another cycle, because you see, this young one comes from a lineage, a parentship that has drugs and alcohol going back generations on both sides of the family. Again, another result of colonization. And I was this young one, and I broke the cycle. 16 years ago, I was addicted to crystal meth and went to prison, and I was 20 years old, just turning 21, and hadn't quite woken up to a lot of the things that we're going to talk about tonight. But I knew that things weren't right, and as I said, I self-medicated. I ended up getting addicted to crystal meth at the age of 20, going to prison and discovering meditation, and that was the beginning of me starting to work on my own trauma and to reach deeper and to understand the roots of my trauma and to heal that. And so it's been a journey these last 10 years, after waking up in that way, getting out of prison, and then waking up to what's really going on in our world and the truth about the political game and some of the things we're going to speak about tonight. And so I've been spending the last 10 to 12 years first as just an activist who didn't know what to do other than run around and talk to as many people as possible about all these crazy things I was learning about. And with the couple of friends I had that also saw things going on in the world, started getting organized in Houston, where I'm originally from, started writing blogs that eventually turned to articles and eventually got hired to do this full time. And now I'm blessed to have a radio show still in Houston while living in Mexico. I've produced documentaries and written books and done all this fun stuff that is aimed at trying to get people to think, to recognize their own power, to recognize that each of us is a free, powerful, beautiful human being. And the effects of colonization are not just for those of us who are of darker skin color, not to diminish anybody's struggle at all. I think the goal is to recognize that the way that we are all affected by these forces. And so that brings us to today, where colonization is now reaching a new level, a new height, I guess you could say, with what we're witnessing with COVID-19. And excuse me if I refer to it as COVID-1984 for the rest of the evening. But this colonization is reaching new heights because it's not only the colonization, as I said earlier, of the food supply and of our livelihood, which is, you know, that's one level, but it's now down to the DNA level. It's trying to colonize the human genome, but not only the human genome, the genomic code of the animals and of the plants and of the earth itself. That is the stage that we are now. And so after this predator energy left, started in Europe, and that spread to the east and the west and all around the world, the battle that's been fought for the last 500 years by different indigenous people has now come full circle, where the folks in the so-called first world countries are being forced into quarantine hell toes, vaccine passports, and all kinds of mandates that, to me, at the end of the day, I believe in freedom of choice. I think you should have the right to choose what you do one way or the other. If you want to get this thing, then you can. If you don't, then don't. So my point here is, though, now that colonization has come full circle and the folks in the so-called first world are now realizing what many of our people have been dealing with for the last 500 years. But now this colonization force, it doesn't care anymore. It's coming for all of us. It's coming for the indigenous people here in this area, which is why, you know, shout out to the people around this area who have been, I mean, I'm just going to say it, standing up for their sovereignty and rejecting the vaccines that have been tried to force on them, because there have been municipalities around this area who have been standing up and saying, we've had injured people. We're not going to take it this time. We don't trust you. And again, that should be their choice to do so. My point here is that this energy, it's continuing today, and it's like we're at a breaking point now, I feel. Not in the sense of something to be feared. Honestly, I don't know how you guys are feeling, but the last year and a half has been the best year of my life. I mean, I hate to say it because they're like showing us all this crazy things in the world, and there are people, brothers and sisters of ours, family members, who have been living in fear. You know, people I know in the UK and elsewhere, in Australia, who've been totally locked down, not even allowed to leave their own countries. I mean, just something that to me is just unbelievable. And with all that going on, still, it's been an amazing year. It's been a beautiful time for creation. I feel like if anything, this whole thing has been a motivator and a catalyst for many of us to start focusing on, okay, well, maybe I've known things are crazy out there in the world, but what am I actually going to do about it? How am I actually going to change my life? How am I actually going to make sure that, again, I can leave something behind for the seven generations and beyond? Because it is our actions that today that are shaping the world they're being born into. I have six nieces and nephews, 12 and under. The youngest one just turned 2 years old. He has no memories of a world pre-COVID. If we don't take steps to make sure that these ideas and these important facets of our society around the world, freedom of movement, freedom of speech, self-ownership, these concepts survive, then these young ones will be raised in a world where those concepts are gone. And that's, I'm not here to fearmonger at all tonight. If anything, this is a call to action, a call to hoping we can leave here tonight. Just as an example, there's a good amount of people here in this room I haven't counted, but if you look around the room and you see faces you don't know, please connect with each other. If anything I say tonight sparks your desire to go out of here and actually do something to get activated, then please get to know each other, because I'm going home to Morelia in a few days and we're going to keep building over there, but we need people building all around the world, all over Mexico, all over the US, and on. So we're reaching this breaking point of threats of taking away our rights to freedom of movement, this idea that corporate medicine should be revered, and the vaccine immunity passports, whatever you want to call them. I mean, again, I'm not here to fearmonger, guys, but this is my job. As a journalist, every week I'm reading, researching, interviewing people about these things, writing articles. The European Union just last week voted to go forward with vaccine passports. They're hoping to have it rolled out across the 27 member states by June. Canada just announced that they're going to require them for entry into Canada. Like, it's happening right now. This is not some far-off thing to be concerned about. This is the reality that we have to decide maybe where in the world we feel safe and what are we going to do with our loved ones. And those of you who maybe have to go back home to one of these places, we need to start thinking about what are we going to do if they say, in order for you to get this check, in order for you to get your 401k, to get your retirement, to go to this bank, in order to eat, you need this passport that says you have the test or you've been immunized or whatever you want to say. Have you thought about that? And again, this is not fear-mongering. This is being prepared, because our ancestors, they did not work hard for us to survive and get to this point so we could lose this concept of human liberty and diversity and true diversity and respecting the beautiful diversity in humanity that I think many of us appreciate. Because what this culture wants, what this predator energy wants, and we can name names and point institutions, but at the end of the day, it's bigger than just one person or one organization. They want to erase what it means to be human. They want to erase your creativity, your individuality, to make you a part of some sort of centralized system, all in the name of the good of everyone, right? We won't spend too much time on that. But the point is, we're at the point where we should either say, okay, if we're aware of these things, like if everybody in here, if everybody is just basically shaking their head, yeah, you're right, this is true, like you guys already know this, okay, so then the next question is, what are we doing about it? Like, is it enough to know? I've been really reflecting on that the last couple months, and I don't think it's enough to just know anymore. Like, what good is it to know that, you know, there's a train wreck on the, you know, coming up ahead, but to just stay in your seat and just, you know, at least you have a good time while you're in the car, I guess. My point is that we need to start thinking tangibly, practically, how we get organized locally. That's what I'm going to focus on for the majority of the rest of this talk. Whether local means here in San Cristobal or wherever you're going back to, the point is that we need to come together as a community. We need to look past these petty divisions that these people have tried to put in front of us, like the false left-right paradigm and other labels and ways to just divide us. Even, like I said earlier, I've been oppressed, and so, you know, your people or your color or whatever is the enemy. Like, I don't think that comes from a place of healing. I think that comes from the fact that, and what I've been taught by my elders, is that there's just so much trauma. There's just intergenerational trauma that we can look back on our timelines, again, no matter where you come from, and see these different things. Maybe it's not the same story as mine, you know, drug addiction, going to prison, and these kinds of things. But we all have our own struggles. We all have our own doubts, fears, and insecurities and things that we deal with. And the sooner we start dealing with those things, as sort of disconnected as that sounds from dealing with immunity passports, that's actually part of the solution, is us healing our own trauma, working on our own internal world. So to answer the question, what do? I call these two solutions. They're from my book. It's called How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State, which you can download for free on my website. In English, I have the Spanish versions here tonight for anybody who wants to pick those up. How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. And essentially, it's everything that we're talking about here. I published the book in January 2020, right before COVID hit, and it became really relevant. So it's about this exact situation. How do we survive in this world where there's increasingly, again, these are the things I focus on as a journalist, a lot of digital surveillance topics. Facial recognition is a huge growing threat. Mainly in the United States and the Western world, it hasn't quite tapped into Mexico, which is one of the reasons why I'm here, but you better believe they're trying to roll the same things out here, trying to get Mexico modernized and bring those things into different areas. But if you're in Europe, the United States, Canada, you know, Australia, facial recognition cameras everywhere, increasing biometric, you know, requirements to fly, to travel. These kinds of things were already happening before COVID. COVID has just given them the reason to sort of, let's roll everything forward, like let's move faster because COVID and keep everybody safe and all these kinds of things, right? So I wrote the book thinking about how does a person like me who really, I don't have a bank account, I haven't paid taxes in the US in 12 years, I try to stay out of their system as much as possible. One of the benefits of being in Mexico, you know, our bills are under a fake name. We have a paper contract with the person that we, you know, we rent the house from. We're off the grid, out of that system to as best degree as possible, because I do believe that as we progress forward, the more entrenched you are in that system, the more difficult it is going to be to continue to thrive and survive, I think, in the way that most of us have celebrated our lives. Like that concept is going to be very limited because of these concepts of the vax passports and these other things that they're rolling out. And so in the book, I describe these two specific strategies. And one of them is called exit and build. And it seems like if you aren't from this area, then it seems like most of us have chosen some level of this. What exit and build means is you recognize that the area that you live in, the town, the city, the state, the country, is maybe it's not the most friendly to liberty and freedom and the values that you hold dear to your heart. And you recognize, you know, maybe the town over, the state over, the country over is a better option for me. I might have more ability to thrive in that place. So you exit from that place and you build elsewhere. That's what we've done. We left Houston, came down to Mexico. We're in the process of getting some land. We just put a deposit down the other day and building an intentional community based on the principles that we're going over tonight. So that's the exit and build strategy. And again, that doesn't necessarily have to mean you move to Mexico. Maybe you just move a town over, city, you know, whatever. But it's about recognizing that maybe the place you're in isn't really, maybe, you know, you feel people are lost or whatever you want to say, or it just doesn't work out for you. So you choose to exit and build. The other strategy is kind of like the reverse. It's what I call hold down the fort. And it's just as it sounds. Like maybe you recognize that there is a lot of work to do in your area and you're committed to doing it. So you choose, like, this is where I'm building. I'm buying land here in this area, or I'm going to, you know, have my apartment or home or whatever it is you got. And I'm going to learn as much as I can to prepare myself for whatever's coming and to make sure that I can thrive. And I don't need their food systems and I don't need their economic systems. Because again, if we're dependent here in Mexico, we have the beauty of markets everywhere. I mean, it's like a different reality, really. But in the US and other places where people are totally dependent on the grocery store system, the mass food production system, they're going to squeeze them out. And eventually they will require these passports. They've already discussed it in the UK to get into grocery stores. And you need to get your family and friends to think about that. How are you going to feed yourself if you can't even get in the store without requiring this? Especially like if you know right now, sitting here, you know 100% in your mind, you're not getting this injection. Anybody here not getting this thing? So maybe a few people, okay? And I'm sure there's more of us. So my point is, if you know that 100% certain, you're feeling like, look, for whatever reason, it's your personal thing, but you know you're not getting that, then you need to think about how you're going to interact with this future that is basically going to try to limit what you can do without that thing. Because that's the reality we're in, guys. I mean, there's protests happening in parts of Europe. There's protests happening in parts of the U.S. and other places, but it's not stopping. This kind of steam engine is rolling forward. And I don't think that means that all is lost. It just means we need to be prepared and think about where we're going and how we're going to survive and thrive into the future. So again, you can exit and build, or you can choose to say, you know what, I'm going to hold down the fort here. I'm going to stay in my hometown, or even if it's not your hometown, you just choose a specific location that is, you know, where you're already based, and you build there. You get involved in activism, you work with other people. And I think that, you know, there's more depth and details in that in the book, but those are the two kind of basic things that I've seen. And for me, it makes sense that I'm trying to live a life of value and principle that helps keep me in alignment so that my thoughts, my words, and my actions all reflect the principles that I hold dear. The two main principles that I care about, the seven generation principle, thinking about the way that my actions are going to impact the seven generations and beyond, and self-ownership is a big aspect of that as well. The fact that I think that we are all free, powerful, beautiful people who own themselves and who have the capability to make their own decisions, and thus it is wrong for me to force my will on any of you, even if I don't like the way you eat, dress, who you love, whatever. I have the right to disagree, to communicate with you, and walk away, but I have no right to force my agenda on you, to physically compel you, or I would even say use government to force you to live the way that I want. And so to me, that's because I respect you as a sovereign individual being. Those two principles guide nearly everything I do and the work that I do, trying to make sure and reflect, am I violating anybody else's sovereignty and my goals, you know, in my pursuit of my passions, and always making sure not to. You might have other principles and things that are important to you, but the goal is first you need to understand them. You need to understand what your values and principles are, because I feel like this system thrives off us being completely clueless. Like, generally, we all think that we're good people, like, yeah, and we probably are to some degree, but have you actually stopped and thought about what you feel is wrong, and you know where your boundary is? For me, it's, you know, again, like, you're free to do what you please as long as you're not using force or violence against me or coercion and trying to, you know, do that to other people. And I think that allows for diversity to flow, right? So when we're having this diversity and we're recognizing that the world in front of us, the world that others would like to create, the predator class would like to create, is a world that is about, it's not about consent, it's about submission, it's not about freedom, it's about slavery, I would say, and it's not about diversity, true diversity, and humanity thriving and being the beautiful diversity that we can that's represented here in this city. They want us to be homogenous. They want us to be this one single entity, to be sort of like bland, to lose our culture, to lose our customs, to lose the beautiful things that unite us and bring us together. And I think that's where we need to step up and assert. We need to know what our principles are. We need to connect to our roots and make sure that whether you're choosing to exit and build, you're choosing to hold down the fort. And the third option in the book is called apathy is death. Because like I said, if you know these things are going on and you choose to do nothing, then I guess you're only damning yourself in the end. But we need to fight for ourselves. We need to fight for the bigger than ourselves, for the coming generations. And so as I move on to more of the solutions, in the book I talk about this concept of this freedom formula. This can help you understand, again, what you're willing to do. Maybe you still want to use the banking system for one reason or another. I don't know why people would. I know there's different reasons too, but personally, I think, again, if we're thinking about our principles, we got to recognize that the banks that we use, especially these big banks all around the world, are responsible for robbing the people all around the world in 2008, prior to that, for the last 100 years. And if we are going to protest and march or post on social media or change your profile or whatever the thing is that everybody's doing, then shouldn't we actually live by those principles? Shouldn't we actually do more than just be reactive? Maybe we should start living in line with the values that we have and stop supporting the institutions that work against our goals. And I think some of us see maybe leaving the U.S. as a way to do that. So this freedom formula is kind of built with that in mind, of thinking about what exactly you're willing to do. So on one side of this equation, you have your desired level of freedom, of liberty. And again, this means understanding a bit about your principles and your goals and what it is you want to have. And, you know, a lot of people have this, especially on social media, this sort of vague, I want to live off-grid in an intentional community, and, you know, they post memes about it and stuff, but how many people have really stopped to think of, like, you know, what am I really headed to? Like, you know, am I just kind of aimlessly wandering through life, which is fun sometimes, or do I have an objective? Do I have a goal? Because, again, COVID 1984 should be a catalyst for everybody to start thinking about what you want in your future, what kind of life you're trying to create. Because to me, I don't know, this is, like, the most beautiful, fun, exciting video game I've ever played. Every day I get to wake up and just manifest and create and do things and will them into being. And like, it's like, whoa, I have this thought and I talk about it and then I take steps to make it happen. And then boom, it happens in the world. Like, that's so cool. I wake up excited about life and I wake up excited about the opportunities that we're facing right now. So don't be overwhelmed by it. There, you know, we have goals and you take steps to get there. So the freedom formula is, understand your desired level of freedom. What is your goal? What do you see yourself? What does freedom even look like to you? What does that word mean to you? What would you like to have? Does that mean you want to have your own food grown in your backyard? You want to have, you know, be off the electric grid? You want to live around other people? Really think about what that is. So you have that part of the equation, right? And you add that to the steps that you're actually willing to do, you know, what you're really willing to do in life. So say, like, as an example, maybe you want to live off-grid. You have this dream of a permaculture farm and food forest and all these things, and you see it. You can taste it. But then in your daily actions, you haven't done anything. You actually haven't even looked up what permaculture really means. You watched a couple of videos, but that's maybe not enough. You're not going to achieve your goal because you haven't put any momentum, any action into it, right? So if you understand your desired level of freedom and then you add that to what you're actually willing to do, like if you say, this is what I want and I'm committing myself, I'm going to put my energy, time into learning these subjects, figuring out how I can make this happen, make the moves you need to make, then you will achieve those goals. So your desired level of freedom plus the actions you're willing to take equals your actual experience of freedom. Because again, if your vision is different than what you're actually willing to do, then it's not going to look like what you expected. But if you're willing to do almost anything, if you're willing to commit yourself and make lifestyle changes, I know it's difficult to ask people to actually change their lives, and I'm not here to do that. It's all on each of us to think what is appropriate for us to survive the world that is on this horizon. As I said, I try to opt out as much as possible from these unsustainable, immoral, unethical systems. And one of the ways that I've been trying to do this, and some of you might have heard of this concept, it's called Freedom Cell. Is anybody familiar with Freedom Cells or part of the San Cristobal Freedom Cell on Telegram? If you're not, I encourage you again, if you're here and you see new faces, please come connect with them and get to meet some of the folks here. So Freedom Cells is a concept that was first introduced to me in, I want to say 2015, early 2016. And essentially it is the idea that we organize in groups of eight, 7 to 9, but the ideal number is 8. And the 8 number comes from some research into group dynamics and social dynamics. The idea being that we organize locally in groups of 8. The goal being that there's no centralized, you know, leadership. There's no one person in control or in charge. That the knowledge, the power, the information, the resources is diffused within the group. It's shared within the group. And as a freedom cell, just some suggestions, because this is a decentralized concept, but we've put out some ideas. Maybe your freedom cell is really concerned about food security. So you find 7 other people, or maybe you can't find 7 just yet. You find 3 people. So you start with those 3 people, and you start meeting, getting to know each other. What are your interests? What are your goals? And you realize that everybody has an interest in food security. So as a group, you guys start figuring out, well, what foods can we grow in our area at this time, and start, you know, doing that research and find a spot, and y'all start a little community garden together and start working together. That's an activity a freedom cell can do. A freedom cell can be maybe a group of parents who are interested in peaceful parenting and unschooling, and so their freedom cell is exclusively focused on those topics. Other freedom cells might be concerned about self-defense, so they go out and they learn to shoot guns together if they're into that, or they take a self-defense class together, whatever they choose. Again, it's a decentralized concept. Some folks might also be concerned about food security and think that the best strategy is not only to grow food, but to store food. So they say, hey, as a group, let's make sure that each of our cell members have 2 weeks of backup food. Let's start there, right? And then as a group, they all start learning about how to store food and teaching these skills to each other. The idea being that we can organize in these decentralized groups of eight all around the world, essentially, and all the cells are going to look different based on the environment, the local resources, the local needs, the people involved. But the idea being that we are building this decentralized parallel network outside of the hands of governments and corporations that will allow us to trade resources, to connect with other like-minded communities as we travel. And so, as I said, this concept was first introduced to me in 2015, 2016. I think I put out a video about it in 2016 and have just been, you know, talking about it since then. I wrote about it in that book. And in the last year since COVID, so the website is freedomcells.org, and I'll tell you more about it in a moment. That's C-E-L-L-S, like the cells in your body. Because again, this is the concept we're talking about. Just like we have a billion, trillion cells in our body, each of them is powerful and unique on its own, but it's also part of this larger organism that is us. You know, it's like a fractal within our body. And the cells kind of act like that. They're individual and local, but then, so I mentioned earlier about you have one cell and you're learning to grow food and you're storing food. But then as it grows, maybe there's, now you got 15 people. So you split off into two cells. You got the North San Cris Freedom Cell and the South San Cris Freedom Cell. And those groups meet more regularly. They organize, they think of strategies that work for them. And then maybe all the local groups, regional groups, meet up once a month to share ideas, to share resources. And then you could even have state gatherings. We've done international Freedom Cell conference calls and had 300 people from around the world. And in the last year, when COVID-1984 blessed us, the Freedom Cell Network blew up because people were finally ready for solutions. It's a very interesting feeling to be talking about this concept for 4 years and to have people getting it conceptually and to see people doing it in small pockets. And then now when 2020 hits, we have 20,000 people who have joined the website from all around the world who are people who are interested in permaculture, people who are interested in, you know, getting off the grid. And I would say people across the political spectrum, because it's not a political thing. It's just like, if anything, we encourage people like, hey, in Freedom Cells, if you're in the Freedom Cell Telegram chat, like say the San Cristobal one and others, we have one for all of Mexico as well. Assume everybody knows the problems. Focus on the solutions. You know, don't post in the group about, hey guys, you see this crazy thing? Post in there about what we're gonna do about that thing and how we're gonna get organized around that, how we're gonna protect ourselves, how we're gonna thrive into the future, right? So this concept has just been blowing up so much with people finally, I think, ready to organize on a local level. It's really become huge in parts of India thanks to this powerful activist named Johan, who's just been doing amazing work. Really popular in Australia. It's definitely growing around parts of Mexico and, you know, across the U.S. And so when you visit freedomcells.org, it's set up like a social network, but it's not intended to be. Like, I really like to stress that because we don't want people to post their favorite recipes or their pictures of cats or, you know, whatever. Go on there, create a profile, put the skills that you have, the skills that you're interested in, add your location, not your home address, but put like the town you're in. And the reason I say that is because the main feature of the website are the two maps. There's a member map where you can go search and search 50 miles, 100 miles, and find all the people who've joined around your area, look at their profiles, see what they're about, connect with them. You can also search the cell map that shows you all the pre-existing cells that are already out there that people are creating. And some of them, again, are like regionally oriented, some of them are topic focused, like food freedom and other things like that. And in addition to the website, on the website, there's a page that says Telegram Cells, and people have just kind of organically started organizing all over Telegram as well. So there's, you know, Freedom Cells across Europe and Mexico and North America and Canada. And it's just, I mean, it's really just it's way beyond me and, you know, the couple other guys that have been pushing it for a few years. It's really just grown to a magnificent level. And I'm not here to say that Freedom Cells are the only solution. And I also want to say that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you call it. Pods, hubs, hives, circles, who the heck cares? Just get organized. Like, that's what we need. We need to get organized on a local, decentralized level, and we need it to happen everywhere. And it is happening. It is happening, not just through us, but other groups and people who seem to all being drawn to this idea of organizing in small groups. Because the concept behind it is that if you have too many people, things, could, you know, there, you get, it gets a little hectic. It can be too many people trying to assert their way, et cetera. But if you have only a couple of people, you can't get bigger projects done. And there's some other research into that, but 8 is like an ideal number. But again, don't be intimidated by that. If you've got 5 people that you live here in San Cris with, and you know 5 people who are also concerned about these things, like, get together. And Nathan, raise your hand, over there in the corner, he started the San Cris Telegram cell. Of course, he's not the leader because there's no leaders in this, but he's moderating, he's helping push things forward. My suggestion, my recommendation is host the Freedom Cell meetup and see who comes out and see how many people are interested, and then start thinking of concepts on the local level of what you guys can do here. This is what we were doing in Houston. This is what we're doing back in Morelia. And, you know, I feel like whether I'm in Houston or Mexico, it's just important for us to pay attention to what we're doing. And I feel like I've noticed some folks, especially those of us who weren't born in Mexico, maybe are intimidated about doing different types of activism or talking about certain things. And I understand that fear, but I think that it's important for us to co-create and to integrate with the local communities that have a lot to share with us, you know, and for us to share what we can, but also be willing to listen and to know that we have, I think, the best of intentions, and that is to help all the people, whether that's somebody from the U.S., America, or wherever. And I want to tell you about a couple other projects as I start to wrap up. I don't know what time it is, but I can talk for a while. So thank you guys for your time and patience. So last year when COVID-1984 hit, Miriam and I, like I said, we've seen this stuff coming. And I told her, I was like, I think this is something we need to be paying attention to. The next day they start talking about restricting movement in the U.S. between states, saying that they might shut down interstate travel. And I told her, I'm like, okay, we need to be ready to go in like the next 4 days, maybe a week at most. And then the next day it was like them discussing like they're potentially going to close down the border. And we left the next day. Like, we packed up everything, came down from Houston. She has family in different parts of Mexico. So we're like, let's just go see your family. Let's get away and watch this from a distance and see what happens. And we've been here for over a year now. Like, I mean, obviously we've gone back and forth. That's part of what I want to tell you about. And we made Morelia in Michoacán our home, and that's where, as I said, we've been looking for land, and we have a freedom cell out there, and have been working with some of the people here in San Miguel and other parts of the country that are also starting to organize. There's freedom cells popping up all over Mexico. If you are someone who travels, you can be used as a network when you travel as well. But so as I came down here and I used my journalism and you know, my loud mouth as a way to talk to people about this, people started reaching out to me and saying, do you know how to help me get out of the U.S.? Do you know my family's never been there, but I'm really scared what's going on. Can you help me get out of Europe? Can you help me get out of Canada? People like genuinely terrified and looking for help. And I know that I can't help everyone, but what I write about in this book is this idea of the counter-economic or the modern underground railroad. And it's funny, like I said, I published this a month before COVID, and it was this idea that maybe in the future, there might come a time where people want to get out of the U.S. or other places, and how do we build a network of helping people? Because people did use, not only did they use the Underground Railroad in the U.S. to go to Canada, they came to Mexico through Texas as well. So there's a precedent for it. But the idea was that maybe there will come a point where things just get too dangerous and less free for certain people like us who might have lines in the sand. And we, you know, how are we going to help people get out or get in or whatever it may be? And maybe that sounds crazy to some of you, but here we are in 2020 and people are looking for a way out. And the borders, despite what they said, obviously, I would assume most of you know this, they never closed the borders. They claim it's been a year now since they closed the borders on March 21st and you can't drive across. I think we've driven across 7 or 8 times. Like, you know, we go back and forth. And part of the reason is I decided to launch the Underground Railroad. And on the Freedom Cells website, freedomcells.org/railroad, if you know people who are in the U.S. or who can make their way down south to Texas, we basically go meet people there. When we see our family, we meet up with people, and we do a caravan across the border to help them, for those who've never done it. And they can either follow us to Morelia, and we help people get set up locally, or they can kind of go on their own way. We're going back in the beginning of June for a couple of weeks, and we're going to be doing another caravan. And this is just something that I've personally, that we've committed ourselves doing, but I don't know how much longer we'll be able to do it legally, you know, just crossing the border, because we're not doing anything illegal. Let me make that clear. We're just helping people who are unfamiliar. But if they ever do really enforce that thing, there's still going to be a need for people who want to get in and out, and we will have to figure those things out, or at least people like myself will help figure those out, and people who want to. So I just want to share that idea that that's what I call the counter-economic, or just the modern underground railroad, and that's on the Freedom Cells website as well. And then I'd like to, if I can briefly, tell you guys a little bit about the intentional community that we're going to start. Does that sound good? You guys still with me? I know I've been going for a while. You guys good? Thank you, guys. Thank you for your time. Okay, so thank you. I'm almost done. I promise. We're getting... I hope you're enjoying this. Okay. Okay, so the community that I talk about, it's not in that book. It's in my other book called Manifesto of the Free Humans. And it's a project that I started calling the Conscious Agora. And it's a big concept that's in the book. I don't want to spend too much time getting real deep in it. But the point is that those principles I outlined earlier, wanting to live in accordance with the permaculture principles, which is basically indigenous, principles of working with the land, wanting to respect people's individual self-ownership, wanting to live with people who care about mindfulness solutions, obviously that's a big topic, but people who generally are still trying to learn and grow. Like, I don't want to be around, I don't plan to ever stop growing or learning. Does anybody plan to ever just stop growing and learning and shrivel away and just be useless? I hope not. Because for me, like I said, this is a cool experience. Whatever's coming next, oh man, I'm hoping it's cool too, but we'll find out. But this experience here is just like constant learning and growing. And so I want to be around other people who care about mindfulness and healing their wounds and the mechanics can be worked out. But those are sort of the kind of guiding principles of this Conscious Agora. And it's also things like we want to be off-grid. We don't want to be connected to the electric system, and we want to find our own ways to power internet and things of this sort. And me and Miriam just recently became permaculture certified this past year. Again, like, it motivated us to just move forward in all these directions we've wanted to learn. And learning from lots of really powerful teachers and learning from elders from the Choctaw Nation in Oklahoma, and just incorporating all this knowledge and incorporating the fact that, I'll tell you guys a secret, I'm an anarchist, and we're building an anarchist community. What I mean by that is that actually does influence what we build, though, right? Because, again, the principles are important of what we're trying to build. Over the last year, I've noticed that lots of people have vague ideas about what they, living in community, but they haven't really thought about it. And I think that's why things fracture. And as I've been learning from other communities, it's because there's not enough communication. And I feel like that's in all of life. As humans, we fail to communicate, or we hold things back, or we don't listen. There's so much to be gained in that area. But the communities that fail, they tend to fail because they don't have clear understandings and agreements of what the values and principles. It's just like, yeah, we want to live united by love. Okay. What does that mean? Everybody's going to think, interpret that differently, right? So we've been spending the last year working with the group, and we went from 400 people who emailed interested in this community down to 50 people to 24 people, and now it's like in the range of 15 to 20. And like I said, we just put a deposit down on a piece of land, the first piece of this project that I call the Conscious Agora. And so we're going to build the community that is based on these principles and also respects animal life and works with the planet. And we really have a beautiful start to this that I'm hoping in the next 6 months to a year to really start sharing with people. But the goal is for this to be a network, not just for us to be a part of, to do this. This is number one. And the goal is to build as many of these in different parts of the world where people can know that these are communities that are united under these different principles, and that these are places that I can go visit, that I can learn from, that I can share my skills with, and we can really build. And this is, of course, just connected to the Freedom Cells. The Freedom Cells, some people might stay in the cities and just organize on the local level in their city, like Houston's really active. Others are going to choose to take their Freedom Cell out to the countryside and buy land, kind of like what we're doing. Whatever path you choose, the point is it's time for us to get connected. It's time for us to strengthen the bonds that exist within our communities. When I started this journey in 2010, so like I said, I went to prison in 2005. I went back and forth. I did 18 months between 2005 and 2008. I got out October 2008. By the next year, I started going down various rabbit holes, and that was it, right? And once I started to get organized, once I just started going out and putting a flyer in somebody's hand and just seeing how the potential that could start somebody else on their own journey, maybe they read that or they watch that documentary and they go on their own deeper journey. And we started building this community. It was called the Houston Freethinkers. And we did a lot of really powerful things in Houston that I'm really proud of. And it was a beautiful time to bring music and art and activism together. And what I saw time and time again is that we have all of the resources we already need within our communities. I mean, there's so many talented people here with different skills sitting here right now. If we all went around and got to know each other and like where our strengths are, holy shit, I mean, we could do some amazing things right now. And that's what you guys need to do. That's what we all need to do everywhere, is get to know each other, strengthen those bonds, have faith in each other, not in these systems. Because as my brother John Trudell, a great Native elder, taught us, is that we can't fight on, we can't use the same game, the same playing field that the oppressors use. The oppressors bring us into this game and they say, here's everything you can do. You can protest, you can vote, you can be violent, you can storm the Capitol, you can do all these different things, right? Anything on there is acceptable. But the moment you want to say, you know what, I don't want to play this game anymore. I want to walk away. I want to do my own thing. I want to build something else. That's when they come for us. Because they don't want us to take our energy away from them. We need to starve this system, this physical, economic, spiritual, psychic system, of our energy, of our blood, of our money, of our time, of our spirit. We need to reclaim that. We need to reclaim our sovereignty. We need to reclaim our indigeneity and recognize that, again, we are all indigenous to different parts of this world. We need to reconnect to our roots and where we come from, because that is what they are hoping to sever. That is what they want to sever. They don't want you to know your roots, my friends. The last couple things I want to mention as I close is that some of you may see these flyers around here for the Greater Reset. Has anybody heard of the Greater Reset yet? Not the Great Reset, the crazy one, but the Greater Reset, the cool one. It's an event that I'm co-creating. You can go to thegreaterreset.org. It's for free, 5 days. It's at the end of this month in Zihuatanejo. It's a little far of a drive from here, but it's in the same country. And it's 5 days of free programming. It's going to be online. You can watch it for free. So those who can't come to Ziwa, host a watch party here. Again, get organized, build community. But we're going to be going over solutions for permaculture, getting out of the economic system, building community, intentional communities, and healing our body, mind, and soul. We've got Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Dolores Cahill, a lot of really awesome speakers. I'll be speaking again as well. And we've got flyers, so we've been putting them up around town as well. So I invite anyone to check out the website, check out the lineup. Again, totally free. And if you want to join us in Ziwa, it's just $30 for 5 days, and you can hang out with other people. And some of the speakers will be in person. And that is kind of an initiative of the Freedom Cell Network. So check out that, freedomcells.org, thegreaterreset.org. The last thing I'll mention as I'm plugging my projects is that I have a documentary series premiering tomorrow that some of you guys might be interested in. It is a 16-part documentary series, and tomorrow is episode 1. It's called The Pyramid of Power, and it basically, you know, looks at some of these darker issues, the institutions and the individuals that try to influence our life, this what I call the predator class. And it is not a conspiracy documentary. It is a true crime investigative documentary that it will only be presenting facts, documented facts, backed with sources throughout it. And if you have skeptical friends and family, I encourage you to let them know about it. But it'll be premiering tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Central. You can go to my website, The Conscious Resistance. That's my website, theconsciousresistance.com, and you'll see a trailer for The Pyramid of Power and, you know, all the details you need. But that'll be premiering tomorrow, and then for the next 4 Fridays. And then at the event in the Greater Reset, we're going to be doing it in person. You can watch in person. So this is it, guys. This is the last thing I want to say to you tonight. Once again, thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience. I hope that anything I've said has been informative or interesting or at least entertaining. And I just want to really kind of bring things full circle back to the story that I started in the beginning. It's only recently that I've really started to think about my own struggles with drug addiction, with cutting and self-harm, and all, and really just a lot of self-hate and self-abuse that I grew up with. And I remember as young as 7 years old just hating myself and being really angry and just filled with all this confusion. And it's only been recently, though, that I've started to connect that story and my experience to this experience of colonization on a larger context. And like I said, I can look at my family, and both sides of my family, Sanchez and Bros, the men have all been in prison, all have drug problems, alcohol problems. My great-grandfather hung himself in prison. My grandfather got into drugs and got my father into drugs at 10 years old. I grew up visiting my father in prison. My father died of a drug overdose 3 years ago. Like, the trauma has been very prevalent in my life and in around me. And I just think it's important to understand that context. That there, I'm not here to, I claim responsibility for all my actions and everything I've done. Let me see if I can step this up. Okay, let's see. Check, check, better? Whoa. maybe too much. I just started to place the context of what I went through with drug addiction, with struggling in all these different ways, in the context of colonization. Not because I see myself as a victim or I see any of us as victims, but I think it's that once we recognize the effects of things like colonization, and again, put COVID-19 and what they're trying to force on you and in your body, that think about the precedent it sets when somebody says, I can tell you what you put in your body. I mean, they've already done it. They've already been doing it in the past, but now this is at a new level, down to the DNA level, right? Think about the message that that sends and what that takes from future generations, from the 7 generations. So it's important to understand what's happening in our world, that this is just the next stage or the new normal of colonization. It's coming for each of us, no matter our backgrounds, our interests, our races, you know, our skin color, whatever those divisions are. But we also have the power to change that. That's why we're doing the Greater Reset. That's why we're doing Freedom Cells, because there are solutions that do exist. Does anybody here feel like things are hopeless? No, there's plenty we can do, right? But it's going to take action, it's going to take time, it's going to take energy, and it's going to take commitment. And it might take discomfort. It might take thinking differently. It might take working with people who you don't like necessarily, or who you don't agree with 100%. But if we rise to the occasion, my friends, my brothers and sisters, if we rise to the occasion, I truly do believe that we can shape the direction of where this goes. We can either be swept up in these psychopaths, predator class energy and their plan, or we can create something different. And honestly, I think it's the only solution we have. You won't find me putting my energy into voting, into fighting people on the streets, into yelling at people on social media. But you'll see me in the garden, you'll see me in the streets, you'll see me meditating with you, and you'll see me working to heal this planet. And I really want to ask you guys to join me in that. Thank you guys so much for your time.